everybody. Thank you. my name's Bryony, and I realise I've been speaking mostly in the evenings recently, so I haven't spoken at the morning, so lots of you may not know who I am. But I'm on the staff team here, been part of this church for quite a while now, about 12 years, and it's really wonderful to be speaking to you this morning. And I'm married to Rich, who I think is in creche at the moment because our son will not be left in creche, so hopefully he'll reappear, or you'll hear a child screaming, and that's most likely my child. But this is, hopefully I've got some, have I got control today? Oh yes, how exciting. So this is Rich and Sophie, our eldest daughter. And this photo was taken about a year ago, and this is them at the end of a duathlon. And so it was probably after Christmas last year, I saw this advert for a kids and adult duathlon. And I thought, oh, that sounds really fun. And so unbeknown to Rich, I just sort of signed them up because I thought, oh, this would be great. You know, like father-daughter bonding time. This will be awesome. They're going to really love this. And to be fair, they do love cycling and they do love running. So it wasn't like completely random. Like it's not like he's never done exercise in his life or something. And now he's stood at the back. So I better be a bit more careful about what I say. And I'm also need to apologize. And probably buying beer for putting a picture of him in leggings on the screen. But, so I signed them up for this duathlon. I thought, oh, it's like a lovely March day. It'll be really nice. And we woke up, and it was like the apocalypse had happened. Like there was rain pouring like I have never, ever seen it. But I'd signed them up, and I'd like totally hyped Sophie up that they were going to do this duathlon. And so we kind of had to go. And so we drove, and we sat in the car park at Hillsborough Park, and these poor stewards had set up their like little tents, and the guy from Our Cow Molly was there, who because he was providing milk for after they'd done it. It was so cute, but but it was absolutely pouring, and we stayed in the car until like the absolute last moment, and then I kind of had to like push them out of the car and be like, have a great time, and then off they went. And it was at this point when we also realised that Sophie was definitely the youngest. And we looked like pushy parents. And she was also not able to ride a proper bike at this point because she was only 4. And so she had a balance bike, which those of you who don't have kids, is basically a bike without pedals, which you push with your legs. So it's like quite intensive. And so realizing she was the only child who did not have pedals, and so would be on a balance bike. And it was pouring with rain, and they started, and they had to do 2 laps of Hillsborough Park, which is quite a long way, if any of you do park run there. And then, so 2 laps on the bike and 2 and 1 lap running. And I remember them getting, and I was there and I had Jack like curled up in a sling under a massive umbrella. And they came after the first lap, they came up. And Sophie, bless her, thought that her cycling bit was gone and was done. But no, I was like, keep going, just keep going. And off she went around the second lap. And she did amazingly well. Like, she's really speedy on that thing. And then they had to run. And this is where it got a little bit harder. And I watched them, and I was, like, watching in the distance. And at this point, some of the, like, 11-year-old boys who were doing it by themselves without parents had crossed the finish line. They were, like, really competitive. They'd done it super quick. And I could see from the distance Rich and Sophie, like, just keeping going, and him obviously, like, trying to get her along. And then at one point I saw him just pick her up. And he was running across Hillsborough Park, and the rain was pouring, and it was horrible and cold, and they were so wet. And I could just see them. They were like 2 little dots. But I mean, Rich is 6'6", so it was quite a tall dot with a child slung over his back, and he was running. And they made it to the end, and that was their, like, delighted, I'm smiling at you, but we're going to have a conversation about what you signed me up for in the future, face. And, and today I'm going to talk about perseverance. And when I think about perseverance, I think about that picture of my amazing husband carrying our daughter through the bitter rain after he's cycled 2 laps of Hillsborough Park, he's run half a lap, and he has her slung over our shoulders, whining the whole way round. And he persevered, and they got to the end, and they got their cup of Our Cow Molly milk and a medal, and it was all worth it. And then, you know, now we're the parents who made their 4-year-old do a duathlon in the rain, but she is better for it. So... and so that's what I want to talk about today, perseverance. And I wonder if I was to ask you, what's your example of perseverance? Can you think of a story in your life? He's going now because he's heard himself being talked about and now he's going to leave. Is there a story that you can think, is there an example in your life that you can think, when I'd say the word perseverance, you'd think, oh, that person or that situation? And it might be from the biggest thing that you saw somebody persevere through something really difficult, or it could be just in a small incident. I don't know if any of you watched the football last night, but I would suggest that the 95th minute goal for Germany was a very good example of perseverance, literally to the very end. And for those of us who will be watching the match later, I imagine we'll have another story about perseverance and faith under pressure. And failure under pressure, Mick says. No, do not. I'm not taking that word. Don't let him speak that over us. So we're going to be thinking about perseverance, and we're going to be starting these next 5 weeks looking at the letter that James wrote. And last week, Mick finished our little kind of mini-series on Thessalonians, and lots of what Mick said last week I'm going to repeat, so I feel like maybe this might be what kind of God is saying to us at the church. It's very similar, the way that Thessalonians finishes and the way that James starts his letter, there's some very similar overlaps. So just a bit of context about James. He was potentially, scholars think, the brother of Jesus. He was definitely the leader of the Jewish church in Jerusalem, and he was the leader there for over 20 years. And he stayed there while Paul, Peter, and others went about planting churches all over the regions. And though this is a letter, it's the letter from James, it's not like Thessalonians that we read last week. It's not a specific set of instructions to a specific church. Rather, this is kind of a summary of James's wisdom, this seasoned leader kind of writing down everything he's learned as he's been leading this church and what he would want to share, not only to his church that he's led, but to all the churches that have been planted by his friends and his colleagues. And so this letter doesn't address specific issues in a specific church, like in Thessalonians or in Corinthians, but rather this is just his kind of, this is my top seller. This is everything I've learned here for you. And over the whole of the book, he'll address lots of different issues and lots of different things. So favoritism, wisdom, taming the tongue, wealth, suffering. And all of those he introduces in chapter one. And over the next 5 weeks, we're going to look at the other chapters. But this morning, I'm looking at chapter one. And we'll be unpacking all of those themes. I think I get taming the tongue in a couple of weeks, so that'll be great for us all. But I'm not going to read through the whole of chapter one, you'll be relieved to know, but I'd really encourage you this week to read it in preparation for what we're going to talk about over the next month, because it gives us a good introduction into James, and it's packed with amazing stuff. But this morning, I want to look at the theme that James bookends this letter with, and that is sufferings, trials and challenges of life, and what perseverance looks like. And that's what he starts and finishes his letter with, and that's what I want to focus on. And today my talk is entitled Faith Under Pressure. And James is specifically interested in encouraging the churches the church he leads and the churches that he knows to not lose faith when things get hard. And we know that many of the Christians who would have been hearing this letter read would have experienced persecution or would actually be under persecution as they were hearing it read. And like Paul, in many of his letters, James is wanting to spur these Christians on and to help them keep going despite the challenges that they face. And so I'm going to read from verse 2 here. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kind, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be made pure, mature, and complete, not lacking in anything. So first off, it's worth seeing that James is acknowledging that there will be trials. He's saying there will be tough stuff. And other translations say tests or troubles or challenges. But what's more, he says many trials. So both in the sense that everyone will experience different kinds of challenges, but that we will all have more than one challenge in our lives. And before we get kind of further into what James is saying, we can really see the truth, can't we, in his diagnosis, that the truth of following Jesus hasn't made the life for these early Christians any easier. They're not living some kind of charmed life because they're following Jesus. The truth is that actually following Jesus has made their life significantly harder for the majority of the people hearing this letter for the first time. And as I said, we've been going through the letter, Paul's letter to the Thessalonians in the morning gathering recently, and also in the Foundations podcast. But that was a real life example of a group of believers who were really, really suffering for their faith. And Mick talked about that last week if you missed it. And it's those Christians that James has in mind as he writes this letter. He's acknowledging here that there is a struggle, that the challenge doesn't mean that there's something wrong with their level of faith. That it's a fact of life that everyone, and especially for Christians who are facing persecution, that that is a truth and it's a fact. And also, this letter begins, as he addresses it, he says, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. So James is also writing to a whole nation here. Not just a specific church, but the whole nation of Israel, the people of God. They were suffering. They were experiencing suffering as a whole nation, as well as individuals. And so he's saying, tough stuff is going to happen. But then he says that when it does, we're to consider it pure joy. Like, what? Does anybody else not think, what? We're to consider it pure joy. Like, is there anyone else that feels like, and it's okay to say this about the Bible, that that sounds a little bit insane, that when we're going through tough stuff, we're to view it like pure joy. That's what we're to experience in those moments. Because he's saying this, remember, to persecuted Christians. He's saying it to people who are being physically, emotionally, just challenged and persecuted. And he's saying that in the difficulty they find themselves in, they should consider that to be the most joyful thing they could be going through right that moment. And when you pause and think about it, the believers reading this could have actually found that pretty challenging and maybe even a bit offensive. If I knew something difficult was going on in your life and I congratulated you on the opportunity for joy, I think you probably want to hit me. I think if I came to you and said, that terrible thing's happened, isn't it amazing? What a joy for you. Like, you would probably not want me to journey with you through that trouble and through that challenge, would you? Well, I think we have to ask ourselves, what is the nature of this joy that James is talking about? What is this joy that we should be glad for? And I think the Message translation here can help us, because Eugene Peterson puts it like this. Consider it a sheer gift, friends, when tests and challenges come at you from all sides. Consider it a sheer gift. So the Message describes this word joy, as a gift. This is something precious that should be sought after. And that's how James says this gift is produced through trial and trouble. So he says the trials and troubles come. We persevere. This is just a flowchart of what he says in this passage. Then we become mature and complete. And that is the gift. That maturity, that completeness, that is the gift that is won through trials and troubles if we persevere. So there is something in holding the ground, as Mick said last week. There is something in perseverance through difficulties that makes us whole and mature. And I think most of us would like to be thought of as mature, wouldn't we? But if I'm honest, I want to be mature, but I don't really want to persevere. And I definitely don't want to go through trials. But James makes it more specific in verse 3 when he mentions the trials again. He says, the testing of your faith, that the trials are the testing of your faith. So he's addressing this situation, any situation or trial, he's making it more specific, this is situations and trials that test your faith. The Message puts it like this. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colours. Your faith life is forced into the open. And I love that translation because it kind of captures this idea of when the rubber hits the road and your faith will get revealed for what it is. When the tough stuff happens, your faith will be revealed. And we know from lots of Paul's letters, as I've said, that there were believers who, under persecution and under pressure, are actually turning away from God. And in fact, we've spent the last 6 months in the evening gatherings going through Corinthians, which is a church where that exact thing happens, where people were turning from what they believed and what they knew to be true because it was hard, because they were being persecuted, because there were other options available. And so James is saying here that the tests and challenges to your faith will come, and you will have plenty of opportunities to turn from God. But if you persevere, there is great joy as you mature. And the word complete here that he uses is a theme that James will repeat, we'll see over the next few weeks, over and over in his letters. And the word in the original is perfect. And he repeats it 7 times in this letter. And it means wholeness. It means living with integrity, being fully integrated as a person. That there's no part of us that is at odds with any other part of us or with God, that we're whole. So what James is saying is that perseverance in the battle produces a wholeness. And it's this wholeness that as Christians we should aspire to. Therefore, that is why struggles can be a gift, because they spur us on into this fullness and this wholeness in our lives and in our relationship with God. So I just want to draw out 2 main kind of points from what I've read and as I've been wrestling with this passage. Firstly, that it's not a finish line prize. This gift isn't a finish line prize. The gift that James talks about of being mature, of being made whole, of being made complete, is not a gift that you get at the end of the race. You don't have to be out of trouble to experience this joy. It's not a reward that you get at the end of the race. It's not one of the, you know, the 10K finishers t-shirts or the Sheffield Half Marathon that you see lots of people in those purple finishers t-shirts wandering around the city in. It's not one of those t-shirts that says, I'm a finisher. It's not a medal like the one that that Sophie and Rich had around their necks in that photo. And I think sometimes, to be honest, the church has been, the church has actually been pretty rubbish sometimes when people are going through hard things of saying, like, God will use this. You'll look back and understand why this happened. You'll look back and see where God's hand was at work. And it can feel like we're always saying, like, in hindsight, you will be able to say God was faithful. And I think that's certainly the message that I've heard over the years, that I've just got to persevere through this thing and then I'll get to the end and all will be revealed, what God's saying to me and what God's doing, and it'll all kind of come together. But I believe that God is always speaking. I believe that God is always working. Because in verse 17 of James, it says this: every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. God doesn't change. He is not like us. That means that he is interested in doing things with us now, not when we get to the end of the struggle, because he is always working, because he is always steadfast. He is always good. God is not idle. God neither slumbers nor sleep, the Psalms say. God is always at work. He is steadfast. He is faithful. He walks with us. Even when it feels like he is silent, even when it feels like he is far away. I believe that passage that says he doesn't change like shifting shadows. You know, and if we find ourselves in that place and we don't know how to persevere, then James says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault. And I have skipped that. That's not there, but believe me, read the Bible, that's what it says. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And I love that passage, and I often find myself praying that passage over people, because I really believe that when we face situations where we need wisdom, that I believe that that verse that says God will give us it. And James knew that people who were listening to his letter would say, how can I carry on? He knew that people would say, this burden is just too heavy for me, Lord. And he directs them back to the action of prayer. He directs them back to seeking God and his wisdom, not looking for earthly wisdom. He directs them back to the action of prayer, of the action of seeking after God. So that's the first thing that I want to draw out, is that it's not a finish line prize. This is my other son, Jack. You'll have to look really carefully to spot him, because he's only a few days old there. And I have carried my son, Jack, since he was a couple of hours old in a sling. And he was obviously teeny weeny there, and it was really easy to carry him. He is not so small now. Many of you know my son. He turned two yesterday, and last week, and I still carry him. Now, if you'd have told me when he was born and I was carrying this tiny little bundle that we could like hold in one hand, that I would be able to carry a two-year-old chunk, and I'd say that with great love, but he is, then I would have said, there's no way I would ever be strong enough to carry him. And I would see people carrying things, and I would probably be like, judgy person, being like, well, he should walk and all of that. And yet, I carry him, and I do the school run carrying him in the sling, and this happens to me on a regular basis. Some builder, generally builders or gardeners, will shout at me, how's your back, love? And I'm like, my back's fine, it's probably better than yours, but anyway. and I carry him, and he is, obviously, I couldn't imagine being able to carry him when he was first born, and he was tiny. That was all I could manage. But my muscles have grown as he has grown. The truth is that there are some gifts that we only experience through struggle. Because there are some parts of our hearts that don't get changed or moved without it. There are gifts we only experience through struggle. There are things that grow in us only when there's struggle, only when there's challenges. And I still find that incredibly hard. Because I don't want to go through difficult stuff. You know, when my mum was diagnosed with cancer, I didn't celebrate because it was an opportunity but to become more mature. When my husband was made redundant, I didn't celebrate because, yay, more joy. When the difficult things of life have come, when I've come face to face with my inadequacies as a parent or as a wife, I've not celebrated because I'm going to grow through this. I have not faced the difficult things of life with that attitude. I'm human, and when we have troubles and trials and challenges, I mostly want to run away or do everything in my power to fix it, because I am a bit of a fixer and I'm quite good at that, so generally if I can fix stuff, that's what I'll go to. Or I'll blame God. And I'm learning, and I think what James is saying is that none of those options equal perseverance. Perseverance is a steadfast trust in a steadfast God. Perseverance is a steadfast trust in a steadfast God. Knowing God is in a situation with us, rather than waiting for us at the end to put the medal round our neck, means that we can draw close to him. We can ask him to teach us now, right in this minute, right in the middle of the swamp of life. We can ask him to come and treat and teach us now, not when we're out of harm's way or when we finally meet him in glory. So that's what James says as he kicks off this letter. And he goes really straight to it, doesn't he? And you know, I've really wrestled with this passage this week. And I've chatted to lots of my good friends about this passage, and I have to credit my wonderful colleague Luke Bunting for letting me rant at him and him giving me many wise thoughts from this passage this week. And I did that because I was nervous about getting up here today to preach on this passage when Mick gave me it, because I didn't want to stand up here and say, you know, all that hard stuff you're going through, it's going to produce joy. Because if I, as I said that, you know, earlier, like, I don't really want to be thrown off the stage for being patronising or naive. And so I found it hard to think about how I was going to say these words over us. But the problem is that it is what James is saying. But even though that is challenging, and even though I know that, I know myself personally, that what I'm saying is challenging myself, I know it to be true. Not just in my own life, but in the lives of people in this building right now, in the lives of people in this church. There are so many of you who have gone through challenging stuff. And being on the senior team of this church, I get to glimpse a bit of it, but I know there's lots I don't know. There's lots of stuff going on in people's lives that nobody knows about, hard stuff. But those that I do know, those that I have seen, that over the years there are people in this room that, in the 12 years that I've been part of this church, have inspired me because they know something about God's heart and God's character that I don't, because they have gone through struggle. Because they have persevered and they have stuck with faith and they have stuck with Jesus and they've stuck with community. There is a new depth, and we could call that maturity, couldn't we? About anyone who has walked through a difficult situation and found a new, and maybe somewhat new or somewhat negotiated new relationship with God. And that relationship has been found as they've walked. And there are people around this room, and I'm not going to start a list because Mick tells us always, never start a list. But there are people in this room that have inspired me because you have walked through the struggle and through the challenge. That you have not walked away from Jesus or this place and your friends. And you are different. There are people that I want to spend time in the presence of because there is something about them that I know is born from that place of struggle, that they know Jesus, that they know he is faithful. And so we don't celebrate pain. That would be ridiculous. We don't celebrate trouble, but we do choose to press into God through it. We choose to trust in the midst of the storm. And we do it because the greatest gift was born out of struggle. When Jesus went to the cross, the greatest gift that has ever been given to us, God's grace, his forgiveness, his love, access to the Father, that greatest gift that we could ever have was born from struggle. That when Jesus went to the cross, he knows what it is to struggle. There are some gifts we only experience through struggle. And so the question I want to finish with is, how does our relationship with God get affected when the road isn't as we expected? Will we press on, like Mick talked about last week? Will we keep trusting God? Will we endeavour to look for what God is doing rather than what he isn't doing? Will we look for what he's doing right now and not just at the finish line when all of this rubbish is over? In a couple of minutes, we're going to sing a song that we have been singing a lot on the staff team, and we introduced it in the morning gathering last week, called New Wine. And this is a song that I love. I'm going to invite the band up as well. We're going to sing this in a second. That talks about the crushing and the pressure. And this song is really put into words the sentiment that James is writing about here, that in the crushing, in the pressure, pressing, you are making new wine. You are bringing good things, God. You are changing me for the better. You are making me more mature and complete. And we're going to sing this song. And maybe today you need to sing this song over yourself and the situations that you're facing. You need to sing, God, change my heart so that I know there's a new wine coming out of me. Or maybe you want to sing it over somebody in your community that you know is going through a really rough time, and they need to know that there's new wine, that there's hope. And just to finish, why is this important? Well, because actually, I think it's not primarily about us, even though this feels this morning like a very about us kind of sermon. But we have to offer a different story. We have to offer a different story when it comes to suffering. Because we will all go through the same things. Like, I will experience the same rough stuff as colleagues, as neighbors. You know, cancer, death, bereavement, none of those things differentiate between people who believe in Jesus and people who don't. We will all go through that same stuff. But we have to offer a different story and a different hope. A different story and a different hope. And when we do, when we face suffering with that different story and that different hope, then we will find that we can offer that same hope and that same story to others. And that's what this is about. This isn't just so that we get to the end of our race and we feel more mature and complete. It's so that we bring others along, so that we tell that story of hope, that story of a gift out of suffering, that we get to tell it to others so that they don't have to walk out those horrible things of life with no hope and with no different story. His strength is made perfect in our weakness.